Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 14, King Pururava enchanted by Urvasi, text number 44 to 45. Stali stanam gato swatnam. Sami shami garbam vilakshasaha. Tena dve aruni kritva. Urvasi loka kamyaya. Stali stanam. The place where Agnishtali was left. Gataha. Going there. Ashtama, oh, Ashtatam, an Ashvata tree. Shami Garbam, produced from the womb of the Shami tree. Vilaksha, seeing. Saha, he. Pururava, tena, from that, dve, two, arani, pieces of wood required for igniting a fire for sacrifice. Kritva, making, Urvasi loka kamyaya, desiring to go to the planet where Urvasi was present. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. When the process of fruit of yajna became manifest within his heart, King Pururava went to the same spot where he left Agni Stali. There he saw that from the womb of a Shami tree, an Ashvata tree had grown. He then took a piece of wood from that tree and made it into two aranis. Desiring to go to the planet where Urvasi resided, he chanted mantras, meditating upon the lower arani as Urvasi and the upper one as himself, and the piece of wood between them is his son. In this way he began to ignite a fire. Purport, the Vedic fire for performing yajna was not ignited with ordinary matches or similar devices. Rather, the Vedic sacrificial fire was ignited by the aranis, or two sacred pieces of wood, which produce fire by friction with a third. Such a fire is necessary for the performance of yajna. If successful, a yajna will fulfill the desires of its performer. Thus, Pururava took advantage of the process of yajna to fill his lusty desires. He thought of the lower arani as Urvasi, the upper one as himself, and the middle one as his son. A relevant Vedic mantra quoted herein by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is Shami Garbam Agnim Manta. A similar mantra is Urvasyam Urvasi Pururavaha. Pururava wanted to have children continuously by the womb of Urvasi. His only ambition was to have sex life with Urvasi and thereby beget his son. In other words, he had so much lust in his heart that even while performing yajna, he thought of Urvasi instead of thinking of the mass of yajna, Yageshwara, Lord Vishnu. When the process of yajna became manifest within his heart, King Pururava went to the same spot where he had left Agnishtali. There he saw that from the womb of a Shami tree, an Ashvata tree had grown. He then took a piece of wood from that tree and made it into two aranis. Desiring to go to the planet where Urvasi resided, he chanted mantras, meditating upon the lower arani as Urvasi and the upper one as himself. The piece of wood between them is his son. This way he began to ignite a fire. In the Bhagavatam, it is said, Krite tadayato vishnum, tretiyam yajito mukai, dwarpayam paricharyayam, kalo tadari kirtana. That in the age of Krita Yuga, Satya Yuga, that the process is to meditate upon Krishna if we want to get our desires fulfilled. In other words, Krishna is the source of everything. Krishna is in our heart. He's closer to us than anyone else is. And that's true for everyone, every living entity. And Krishna says, Bhoktaram yagya tapasam sarva loka maheshwaram suridam sarva bhutanam gyatvamam shanti richati. We have to understand Krishna properly in tattva, in truth. We have to understand three things about Krishna. One, he controls everything. That's quite a bit to know. Since he's everywhere, it's easy for him to control everything. For us, it's a little difficult because we're very tiny and we're only in one place. So to control everything is impossible. But Krishna is everywhere, for all time. He knows everything, past, present, future. Therefore, it's quite easy for him to control everything. It's not a big effort on his part. Rasya shaktirva vidaiva shuyate svabhaviki bala kriya cha. Everything is acting according to a natural sequence. Krishna has already figured out what he wants, namely to bring everyone back to the spiritual kingdom, and he set up the material world in such a way to do that. And for him, it's not a big problem. He comes here in order to help out that endeavor by showing his attractive pastimes to the conditioned souls and coming in this age as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But he has only one desire, that is to bring us back to the spiritual world. And therefore he sets up different types of sacrifices for him so that gradually one can obtain him. Now, generally, we think of Satya Yuga as everyone is a pure devotee. But if everyone is a pure devotee, we wouldn't be here in Kali Yuga. Because some people didn't go back to the Godhead in Satya Yuga. Although the process is such that there's every opportunity to get a higher taste just by meditating upon Krishna. The people who are so qualified that they could immediately think about Krishna's pastimes and meditate on them. Not the way we sometimes think about Krishna's pastimes, but they were so deeply absorbed in meditation, at least some of them, that they were actually participating in Krishna's pastimes in their spiritual bodies when they reached perfection and in full love and ecstasy, unlimitedly. Such devotees went back to Godhead. Others, they may have done some kind of meditation, but it was mixed meditation. Just like we ourselves, although we're not in Satya Yuga, our aim is exactly the same as Satya Yuga, to come to the platform of the consciousness that the devotees had in Satya Yuga. We have to go through a different process because we don't have the capacity that they had in Satya Yuga as so far to meditate. But it's understood that by the power of the chanting of the holy name, we can develop that power of meditation and concentration by offenselessly chanting the holy name. And of course, and as always, Krishna is there in our heart and he's willing to help us, Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam, if that's what we want. If we want Krishna, if we want to go back to the spiritual world, in spite of our inability, Krishna will help us become qualified to do so. The problem is, Bhogaishvarya prasaktanam taya parita chetasam yavasayatmika buddhi samadona vidyate. In the minds of those who are too attached to sense enjoyment, the resolute determination for devotional service doesn't take place. So we have so many ideas in our mind, and if you don't know what those ideas are, just chant a few rounds and write down whatever comes to your mind, and you'll see few ideas coming there. Of course, it may take you a few hours to finish your rounds, but in any case, you'll get some idea of some of the objectives that we have, which are not purely devotional service. And therefore, it's difficult to actually nam-namakari bahudanija sarva-shaktis, although Krishna is coming in so many different names, and by chanting them we can get full perfection, but we have no taste for them. And why is that? What is all these desires centered around? It seems like it's all love and power and whatever, but actually it's trinada pi suni chena tureva sahishnuna amayana madadena kirtini aksadahari. It's the basic consciousness that we're floating in, material consciousness, is I want to be something other than humble. I want to find some reason why I'm special, why people should serve and respect me. I really need that as my life's mission, to become more and more unhumble. As a matter of fact, if you tell people we have a process by which you can become humble, very few people will be interested. How to become humble in 30 days. No one will ever buy your book. So, humble means, you know, we didn't join the Hare Krishna movement to find out, to realize, and we're still not willing to realize that I'm 1/10,000th the size of Tipperary size, eternally. In relation to Krishna, I'm always insignificant. No matter how big I may come in the eyes of others, but compared to Krishna, I'm completely insignificant. An atom, one atom at his lotus feet. So that makes people very disturbed. I'm going to work hard to become an Adam. I already feel low and depressed. I got to work hard to feel more low and depressed. That's ridiculous. I'm working hard to get out of my depression, to feel worthy and accomplished, to get more and more talented, more and more strong and powerful and happy. Control things in such a way as my life here can become peaceful and happy at every moment. And yet the material nature doesn't allow it. So therefore my desires are always increasing more and more, trying to make more and more better arrangements for my material happiness, comfort, security, etc., etc. But if one can actually understand that there's no reason not to feel humble, because we're already in a very humble position. We're surrounded by birth, by death, by old age, and disease. And we're, I'm not going to accept it. I'm going to fight against it to the end. And there's an end. No matter how hard we fight, there's an end. So once you become a little humble, and we're taking shelter. Because we may not admit that we're humble, but we're always fearful, we're always in anxiety, we're always feeling I need some shelter. Everyone feels they need shelter, whether it be the vitamin pill, or the push-up, or the shelter of finding out who's behind the conspiracies, who's behind who are the Illuminati, so we can find them and then eliminate them, and then we'll be safe and happy. Everyone will be good. So everyone is in anxiety. Everyone's feeling shelterless in this material world. Everyone's trying to make their body as a shelter. And in spite of the fact that we're trying so hard, in the back of our mind, abhinivesita, we're always fearful about what's going to happen. Is it true? I have to die? No. It can't be true. I'm a good person. Why should I die? What will happen to the world if I leave? Who will save it? And all 8 billion people on this planet are thinking like that. So to become humble is quite a, and well, we can't endeavor to become humble. All we can do is try to understand why we should become humble. We're already in a very humble position. And then Trinadapi Sunichena, Tarar Eva, tolerance. Oh my God, tolerance. I got to tolerate these people? I can't tolerate them. They're not worthy of being tolerated. So to learn tolerance, we're intolerant. If the electricity went off, we'd freak out. We'd become greatly, what to speak of the heat. Today, they didn't buy the boga. There's no breakfast. Where's the cook? Everyone find the cook. What's wrong with you? I'm hungry. You've made an offense against the deity. Which deity? Me. You offended me. May your nose fall off in the next 3 weeks. So to learn tolerance, it's quite an endeavor. It's quite an accomplishment. Who's trying to learn tolerance? Did you ever see a book? How to Become Tolerant. How to Control Your Mind. Yeah, there's all kinds of books about how to control your mind so that you can control others. No one wants to control their mind, simply to control their mind. They want to control their mind so they can win friends and influence people. And then they can let their mind run free because they're in control. And offer respects to others. Well, I offer respect to others as much as they give me respect, just for etiquette's sake. Just like we call each other Prabhu or Madhutu, because what we really mean is I can call you Prabhu, but as long as you keep on calling me Prabhu. And as soon as you stop calling me Prabhu, then I call you something else. Because I don't know if the ladies here like to be called Madhutu. They want to be called Prabhu too. Why should I be not Prabhu? And soon the men will be called Madhutu and the ladies will be called Prabhu. Just to be fair. To make it more equal. As if, you know, when they call my body, whatever my body is, it's like they call, someone comes down the street and they say, what is that? It's a Volkswagen. How dare you call it a Volkswagen? The driver will feel inferior. You should call it a Rolls Royce. A Rolls Royce comes by and says, what is it? It's a Rolls Royce. Wow. It's a Bentley. Rolls Royce is this driver. He doesn't like to be called Rolls Royce. He's a Bentley. It's not good enough for him. So to offer respect, to actually see the good qualities in others, because everyone is a manifestation, everyone is, especially devotees, their activities are the manifestation of the internal energy. And therefore all the devotees are worthy of praise and they're worthy of appreciation. Find something. As I was reading the other day, that I think it was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada, and oh no, it was Prabhupada. Someone was singing, and Prabhupada singing off tune like a frog. Oh, it was Narayan. I think had quite a temper. So Prabhupada heard it, and he. They asked Prabhupada, how was his singing? He said, he keeps good time. In other words, he could have said he sings like a frog, but instead he found something good in his singing, and that's what he said. At least he keeps good timing. So to try to find something good in what the other devotees are doing, that's expertise. That's the expertise we're trying to learn. That's the discrimination that will actually bring us back to Godhead. Now I found the fault in you, and now you better correct it to make me happy. No, actually, to find the good in others and to find the fault in oneself. That will be very productive. Not that I'm full of good qualities and therefore there's nothing for me to improve. I'm perfect, powerful, and happy. No, this is our expertise to find the good qualities in others and the fault in ourselves, how we have to improve. That will bring us back to Godhead. Anything else, if we don't become humble, realize our real position, our actual position, if we don't become tolerant and we don't try to find the good qualities in others and try to improve ourselves, then we're never going to make any progress in devotional service. As they say in English, we're dead in the water. They have the expression around here. It's a colloquialism. It means that we're not going to go anywhere, no matter how hard we try. It's like that bridegroom party where they were going to cross the Ganges and they got into the boat and to go to the wedding, and all night long the boatmen were rowing all night long. And when they got up in the morning, they looked and they found that they were still in the same spot. They hadn't gone anywhere. So they started to complain, "You foolish boatmen, why didn't you row last night? You were probably sleeping like we were." They said, no, we were actually rowing all night long, rowing. So why are we in the same spot?" So they looked up, they looked around, and they discovered that they had forgot to pull in the anchor. So these are our anchors. We don't want to become humble. We're not tolerant. And we don't look for the good qualities in others. We find the faults in others. And we only see the good qualities myself. I know so much. I'm so talented. I sing like an angel. Maybe not like an angel, more like a Gandharva. Everything about myself I love. Therefore, Krishna remains a statue and our body becomes our worshipful deity. And that's only the beginning, so we can actually make real tangible progress, giving up the desire for followers, giving up the desire for personal beauty, for the opposite sex, giving up desires for accumulating wealth, and ultimately to get free and liberated, free from all material problems. Doesn't matter what's going to happen to anyone else. If I'm free from problems, life is good, and that's all I care about. Therefore, we don't really make progress towards the lotus feet of Krishna, to taking shelter of the beautiful, aromatic, ecstatic, loving lotus feet of Krishna. Where when we take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, then Krishna even becomes the servant of his servant. That we get the Supreme Personality of Godhead as our dearest intimate friend. So if we're willing to go through this giving up our false ego, giving up our false identity and our false desires, and actually try to take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, then we can actually make some progress. Otherwise, Maya will give us some opportunity here at Pururava. He was not an ordinary personality. He was the son of the Manu, the grandson of Manu. Not an ordinary personality in Satyayuga. And therefore his mind was more or less pure. But he met Urvasi. Urvasi was not some ordinary lady in the street. She was a supreme demigoddess, prostitute. Gop Kumara in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, he had gotten the Gopal mantra when he was on this planet in the Vrindavan, and when he was chanting, he saw a Gopal, the beautiful Gopal, form of Gopal. But then he also discovered by chanting the Gopal mantra, he got all his desires fulfilled eventually. Although in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, it's only mentioned, it took, he chanted and he went to Indraloka, he chanted and he went to Maharloka. It didn't go so quick. I'm chanting all day long, I'm still here in Ljubljana. What's wrong with this chant? No, it took him lifetimes to go from one place to the next, or at least years. But he chanted and he got his desires fulfilled. He saw Gopal, he appreciated, he loved Gopal to some degree, but he also had desires, and therefore Krishna fulfilled his desires, and therefore he went from one place in the material world to the next. And eventually he came to Brahmaloka, and then he became Brahma, and then he heard about liberation, and he went through the coverings of the universe, through earth and water and fire, and finally he got up to the last covering of the universe, and there he met sex personified, the most gorgeous lady in all the universes. And she said, "Why don't you stay here and make me happy?" He said, "Well, thanks a lot, I think I..." Because he was chanting Hare Krishna, because he was chanting the Gopal mantra, he was able to surpass, at least at some time, the infatuation, the allurement of the illusory energy, which is as powerful as Krishna in the material world. It's not such an easy... It's not possible to surpass the illusory energy without taking shelter of Krishna, without getting a higher and higher and higher taste in Krishna consciousness. It's not possible to pass the illusory energy. Because as soon as we make some progress out of the modes of material nature, Maya will come in a more attractive form. And as we make a progress and we get a higher and higher taste, up into the point of being nishta, or liberation, Maya will always present herself in a different way to try to attract us. And we may become attracted for some time, and then afterwards we realize it's not what I was looking for, and we go back to chanting again, and then Maya will present in a different form, even more attractive. So we shouldn't be too proud. As I said, that Rajneesh, Osa, you've heard of Rajneesh? You've heard of Rajneesh? You've heard of Rajneesh? You've heard of him? Well, Rajneesh was a brahmachari, a famous brahmachari in India. And he, one day, he was a little proud, because sometimes when you become famous, you become proud. You know of him now.
Yeah.
So he put articles in the two biggest newspapers in India, telling the challenging that any prostitute or any woman in India, challenging her to have him fall down. So one famous prostitute in Delhi accepted the challenge, came to Bombay, and spent the night with Rajneesh. And the next day, he wrote an article in the papers. Liberation through sex. So we may challenge, but that's the illusory energy is quite powerful. It's not we. As soon as we challenge the illusory energy, it's like Lord Shiva challenging Krishna to show him Mohini Murti, the most beautiful form of Krishna as a woman, and he lost. What to speak of our little selves? We go against the material energy, we're going to lose every time. As a matter of fact, as soon as we forget Krishna, then some material desire will come. Maybe at the beginning it's a little bit in the mode of goodness, and then we fall into passion, and finally we try to enjoy mentally or physically, and then we fall into ignorance. And then we say, then we realize, oh, I'm suffering now. Help! Get me out of this consciousness. And then we go back to passion. We think, well, I was there a few minutes ago. Let me go to goodness for a while. Help, bring me back to goodness. Then we're in goodness. Oh, it's so boring being here in goodness. A little passion should be good too. So luckily, by trying to sincerely chanting Hare Krishna, sincerely doing devotional service, hopefully we get a higher taste, and therefore we're not so much allured by the illusory energy, even when it's presented to us. Although Maya will present something more attractive, and then we may have to go through a whole series of other tests again till we go through the process, becoming a little humbled by our experience. Then that next time I'm going to become more tolerant. My real problem was I was offending the devotees or other living entities. I was criticizing them mentally. Oh, he's doing something so wrong. He's wrong. And then we're doing everything. That's what we're doing wrong. And because of our offenses against the others, rather than appreciation of the good qualities which will elevate us, our consciousness, then we realize I shouldn't criticize, I should appreciate. And when we start appreciating, then we're less tendency to commit offenses, and therefore we can chant Hare Krishna and get some bigger, higher and higher taste, and more protected by shelter of the holy name. Unfortunately, Pura Rava, although he was, we think, oh my God, he was in Satya Yuga, he was such a good parentage, and he became lusty, but at least Balam Balavatam Chaham Kama Raga Vivarajitam Dharmi Viruta Bhuteshu Kamosmi Bharatarshava. Krishna says, I'm sex life, but it's not contrary to religious principles. So at least he was interested in having a good family with Aurvasi. And maybe they did their sadhana together. And especially in the heavenly planets, they're all devotees. So it's not as bad as we may think. It was actually, his desires were not sinful, completely sinful, although they were lusty, because he was interested in having children, hopefully to raise them in to become good demigoddesses or goddesses in the heavenly planets, which are all automatically devotees. But it's not the aim of life. That shouldn't be our final aim. We may have those desires, but we should understand that there's a higher purpose of life, namely to become conscious of Krishna. And therefore, even when we become a householder, we raise children, we shouldn't forget we're supposed to become humble, tolerant, and appreciative. And then we can give up gradually the desire for wealth and for association with the opposite sex or with some other living entity. And the desire for accumulating wealth or even liberation. We can gradually elevate our consciousness and try to take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet sincerely. So all is not lost, even when we fall into the modes of ignorance and passion. It's not all lost. It's lessons for us. So we can come back and take shelter of Krishna again and gradually come to the process. And as Kali Yuga goes on, as we have happened to notice, the lessons become even more apparent. All the big hope and the dream for the better future of the material society, where we don't have to work, we just go on our iPhone all day long and play video games. It's not reality. And the people have created this artificial state of society, which we've all participated and helped to one degree or another, didn't do it for our comfort and our well-being. They did it for their comfort and well-being. Surprise, surprise. And therefore they're going to make it more and more difficult for us, because material nature is not here for our comfort and well-being. It's for Krishna's comfort and well-being, and to bring us back to Krishna, to make it as uncomfortable as possible if we don't take shelter of Krishna, and to give us all opportunities if we take shelter of Krishna. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Thank you for lecture. How to trust Krishna that he will help us and protect us?
Well, first of all, you have to find out what protection and help are. So then we'll see whether he's doing those two things. And what we have to do in order to get his protection and help. It's not that Krishna is protecting all living entities. Otherwise, that's why the sun comes up every day. He's having the sun come up so we can get enough warmth to live. So he's protecting us in many ways. We just don't appreciate that it's Krishna who's doing it. We just think it's all going automatically. When we sit down to eat something, we think, well, sure, it's supposed to be there because I am who I am. It has to be food. No, Krishna protecting us by providing us the air, providing the water, providing the food, providing this. There's so many different ways he's protecting us. But if we want more feeling, more protected by Krishna, if we want to become more aware of the protection of Krishna, then there's a process to do it. It's called devotional service. Then we'll become more and more aware of how Krishna is protecting us, and we'll invite Krishna's protection more and more, and therefore Krishna can offer it to us. Higher and higher levels of spiritual protection. So that externally, whatever our circumstances are, then we'll be in a different platform of consciousness, of awareness, where we'll always be happy and blissful and loving and aware of everyone and everything in relation to Krishna, in spite of whatever our material circumstances might be. And that's the supreme protection. So even when we're leaving this body, we'll still be in the spiritual world. And we'll go to the spiritual world. But first we have to become aware of that. That that's real protection.
Sveda.
What's that?
Hvala lepa, Maharaj, za krasno lekcijo. Res vidimo, da je vsak dan.
Hvala lepo. Thank you very much.
So she's asking that regarding offenses, sometimes we don't directly offend some devotees with words, but sometimes we do some indirect offenses or in our mind. So what are these indirect offenses, how to recognize and how to get rid of them?
Think, become conscious of what we're conscious, what we're thinking. And become, if we see things in relation to Krishna, then we can analyze it. If we think, this devotee did this to me, may he be cursed for his offenses. So who's actually suffering? Prabhupada gives the example of the vulture flying over the cow, cursing the cow to die. His curse is nothing, it doesn't affect the cow, but he has to live with his cursing, his negative thoughts. He has to suffer because of that. So who actually suffers when we're not appreciating? We don't have a loving spirit, we don't have a compassionate spirit, we have a negative spirit. Who actually suffers? So we have to become conscious. And then of course it accumulates, and then one day we recognize I'm suffering, and then we blame it on everyone else. That's why I'm suffering. I'm a good person. These people caused me to suffer. But we're suffering because we, of all our offenses, subtle or gross, or, what to speak of, physical. So we can become, even if we're not aware all the time, at least sometimes, we should spend a little time appreciating. And you know, that's why we have kirtan. We have our sadhana. So that when we're together, people are chanting, and then I should try to chant as sincerely as possible in association with others. And then when someone else chants or another group chants, I should listen to them and try to appreciate it. That they're devotees, they're chanting, they're praying to be engaged in Krishna's service, they're giving me Krishna's association. So it's an opportunity. Someone's giving class, we should get some appreciation that they're giving me some awareness of how I can become more loving. What could be better than that? When we're taking prasadam, we should appreciate the cooks, the server, the prasadam, the person who brought it, the person who bought it. So it's an opportunity. We can find so many opportunities in devotees to find some appreciation, some gratitude. That will help us progress. Anything else? Yes.
There's one on the internet by Bhakti Yoga Tilburg. Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for your enlightening lecture. Question: did people in previous ages that were part of Varnashrama Dharma system ate meat? Since meat eating is in the mode of ignorance, and for example, Shudras were in mode of ignorance, does that mean that some of them ate meat or of chickens or goats?
I never went to... Which yuga was that?
It says that people in previous ages... that were part of...
I can't remember going to a restaurant in the previous age. I don't know, it was on the menu. But I think it, Kali Yuga began with slaughtering the cow and the bull. Before that, people didn't eat cow flesh or bull flesh. They were too essential for the economy. It wouldn't be allowed. It wasn't allowed. Now, whether the other animals, people lusted after goats, maybe, because there's in the Vedas, there's something about taking a goat to a secluded place when there's no moon and whispering in its ear, "My dear goat, I'm going to cut your throat. But don't worry about it, because after I eat you, then next lifetime, some future lifetime, I'll become a goat. You can cut my throat." So it's there in the Vedas. So obviously, some people did it. Nowadays, people don't. At least not in the West. I don't think they. I guess maybe people do eat. They eat anything. So who knows? But anyhow, it was there. But not cow flesh, not bull flesh. They didn't eat that. Anything else? Khala Grantharaj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.